I want to welcome everyone here in the center and also who's joining us online. We thank you and we appreciate your commitment and your involvement. Let us begin with the Sufi invocation of Hazrat and Icon. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. And as an invocation to all the Masters, Saints, and Prophets, both known and unknown, let us say the prayer Salat, as given by Hazrat and Icon. Most gracious Lord, Master, Messiah, and Savior of humanity, we greet thee in all humility. Thou art the first cause and the last effect, the divine light and the spirit of guidance, Alpha and Omega. Thy light is in all forms, thy love in all beings, in a loving mother, in a kind father, in an innocent child, in a helpful friend, in an inspiring teacher. Allow us to recognize thee in all thy holy names and forms, as Rama, as Krishna, as Shiva, as Buddha. Let us know thee as Abraham, as Solomon, as Zarathustra, as Moses, as Jesus, as Muhammad, and in many other names and forms, known and unknown to the world. We adore thy past. Thy presence deeply enlightens our being, and we look for thy blessing in the future. O Christ, Nabi, the Rasul of God, thou whose heart constantly reaches upward, thou comest on earth with the message as a dove from above when Dharma decayeth, and speakest the word that is put into thy mouth as the light filleth the crescent moon. Let the star of the divine light shining in thy heart be reflected in the hearts of thy devotees. May the message of God reach far and wide, illuminating and making the whole of humanity as one single brotherhood in the fatherhood of God. Oh, I'm checking to see. It seems that we're not able to connect with Murshid Hidayat, but I'll keep the line open. And should he appear, we'll make sure to invite him to join us. I'm sorry that that connection isn't there. We know the heart connection's always there. And he was going to give us a few words about the journey his father made 101 years ago now from India to come to the West to bring us this message. The anniversary of that will be in a few days on September 13th. So, we'll see if he joins us, and we'll have him give us a message if he comes online. May I ask, I see Alima, you're in the chat window. Can you hear me okay? If you can, would you please let me know, or if I'm speaking too softly, I'd also like to know that. See anything, so I'm going to proceed, and inshallah, God willing, the sound is good. What I would like for us to take a few moments to do beyond what we've already done in our invocation with these prayers is to, within your own mind's eye, your heart, your soul, in these few moments, think of those beings that have inspired you on your path, that have brought you to this moment in your life, that have illuminated you, giving you wisdom and insight and courage and encouragement, and invoke their presence now. We ask that the holy ones, known or unknown to the world, from beginningless time and into ceaseless time, from the east and the west, the worlds above and below, please come here, guide us, open our hearts, illuminate our minds, let us feel the divine presence within our soul. We're continuing with the body of teachings on moral culture from the Gathas, and we read from Gatha 2 on this subject, called Saluk, in the Sufi Message 13, titled The Gathas. This is number 6. I hope you'll find both the humor and the seriousness of this title. It's called The Training of the Ego. The ego is trained as a horse. The ego is trained by a Sufi as a horse is trained by a man. Or one could say, the ego is trained by the Sufi as the horse is trained by a woman. A bridle is put upon it. A bridle is put upon the ego, and if you've seen someone ever trying to bridle a horse that has not been bridled before, the fuss that it makes when it has to put the bridle in. And one can make an analogy that also the ego, when asked to refrain from certain activities, does the same thing. So Murshid says, and he loved horses, by the way, so this is a wonderful analogy. A bridle is put upon it, meaning the ego, and man holds the reins in his hand. This training is called by the Hindus Hatha Yoga, which means to gain control, to gain the control of oneself by means of abstinence. And we know from previous teachings that here abstinence is being referred to by refraining from certain activities, not necessarily austere practices. So there's a different meaning that Murshid gives to abstinence. Often, when man does wrong, it is not that he likes to do wrong, but that he is not able to prevent himself from acting in that way. How many of us know that all too well? We start to see it happening, but the wheels are in motion, and before we know it, we've done something or said something, and just as sure as it's happening, we just wish we could take it back. We maybe instantly have regret, but some mechanism takes place, and the wheels keep turning, and we're no longer under control. Has anyone experienced that besides myself?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So here Murshid is explaining that. He sympathizes with it. He understands it. So often when man does wrong, it is not that he likes to do wrong, but that he's not able to prevent himself from acting in that way. In the first place, wrongdoing is almost always the consequence of the appetites and passions, or for the gratification of vanity. And if you remember from the first section on this body of teachings, we had the description of vanity, and we used the analogy, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. We've all heard that. Because it was saying there that sometimes even in our doing good, wanting and seeking that acknowledgement is a form of vanity. You know, so we want to be mindful of that. Fasting and special postures are often practiced by the mystics for the same reason, meaning Hatha Yoga does that as well. The more man gives way to the appetites and passions, the more he is enslaved by them, until he reaches a state where he speaks and acts against his own conscience. And we know this is true. Sometimes we do this in all kinds of ways, and we'll talk about that more throughout class, but you know, sometimes it's with food, or sometimes it's just with being a little lazy, or sometimes it's if we have a habit like smoking or drinking too much at certain times. You know, that is also part of this. How do we control this? You know, or the desire to always have other kinds of appetites satisfied. They may even be hidden and very subtle. But when we have that hunger or that thirst for something that we feel we're not getting, one can be assured that that is the display of the ego. Otherwise, we're quite indifferent to it. Such faults as treachery, flattery, falseness, and all other kinds come from a lack of willpower and from giving way to passions. Such faults as treachery, flattery, falseness, and all other kinds come from lack of willpower and from giving way to the passions. So the question becomes, how do we gain control of this? I mean, how do we do that? As we read throughout this lesson, we'll be given some indications, and certainly in the future lessons we will as well. But those of us that are practitioners, are there methods that you have found successful in helping to develop a willpower? Is there something that we know that we do in our practice that would be useful? I mean, I have a suggestion and we'll do a practice together, but are there any comments that anyone would like to make? Yeah, to develop willpower.
To develop willpower?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for myself, if I have something on my mind that's a little upsetting or agitating the mind, you know, of course, just watching the breath. That's the basic principle for me, is watching the breath. But I might also put a sacred phrase such as, you know, breathing out Ishkala my Bulela, you know, or breathing out Ishkala, breathing in my Bulela.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing that constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing out
the remembrance that God is love, lover, and beloved.
Right.
Yeah, that divine presence of love. Yeah. So the breath is a really good key. And we see that in all the traditions, and we will also be using this method here of working with the breath in a very kind of controlled and metered way. And we will also, after that, be working with a practice of putting a phrase on the swing of the breath. Anayat Khan, Murshid Anayat Khan, Pir Murshid Anayat Khan, always said that when you say a phrase on the breath, you circulate it to every part of your being, from the most material to the most spiritual part of your being. He also, this is why we say grace, praying over the food magnetizes it and blesses it, so that as it comes in, it gives sustenance. That prayer enters the body. It's very beautiful to think of it in that way. So Murshid gives this as one of our basic practices, and most of us do these practices. Today, I thought we would do the Kasab breath, sometimes referred to as pranayama, also sometimes referred to as alternate nostril breathing. But before I get to that, I'd like to read something from Murshid, a couple things actually, because I think you'll find them really beautiful. And this one in particular, because this is from the, a teaching titled Esotericism, The Attainment of Inner Being by Kassab, by Pir Murshid Hazrat Inayat Khan. And this is an unpublished paper. And it's very succinct in describing the benefits of Kassab. So listen to it, and I'll try to read it slowly so you can hear it. When we trace that the source, the man, that man holds life is nothing but light, then we realize that the nature of light is to extend its rays and spread them around it. Again, when we trace that the source that holds man's life is nothing but light, we realize that the nature of light is to extend its rays and spread them around it. Now I'll stop there, because although we're not doing that practice, those that have done the purification breath by breathing in, I inhale divine light and life, I radiate divine life and light, will recognize that in this one sentence, Murshid is giving us the reason why we put that breath, that phrase, excuse me, on the swing of the breath. I'll read it one more time and then I'll move on. This is only a few sentences. When we trace that the source of man's, when we trace that the source that holds man's life is nothing but light, then we realize that the nature of light is to extend its rays and spread them around. So it is with the light of the soul. The soul spreads its light, which is breath. The soul spreads its light, which is breath, and extends it to the right and left. To the right and left. By that, all things external become lighted, that both the eyes and mind may see. But when this light, instead of extending, is concentrated, so to speak, instead of spreading, is thrown inward, then it lights up the inner planes. And all that is there becomes clear. Shall I read that piece again? It's very potent. The soul spreads its light, which is breath, and it extends to the right and the left. By this, all things external become lighted. But both the eyes, by that, by both the eyes and mind may see. But when the light, instead of extending, is concentrated, so to speak, instead of spreading, is thrown inward, then it lights up the inner planes, and all that is there becomes clear. All that is there. That's interesting to think about. What's there? This is done by Kassab. For in Kassab, one masters both the power of light in extending and throwing them inward, and thereby in time develops the light within him, within her, which guides one on their path toward the journey within. This is done by Kassab. For in Kassab, one develops willpower, masters both the power of light in extending and throwing light both inward, and thereby in time develops the light within which guides one on one's path towards the journey within. It's very beautiful about the practice Kassab. So, when we do the practice Kassab, we are told that a typical breathing pattern, it's not the only one that's used, is that we breathe in the left nostril by 4, we hold 8, we breathe out the right nostril 4. We breathe in the right nostril 4, we hold 8, we breathe out the left nostril. That completes one cycle, of which we do 5. Then we continue the breath by breathing both in both nostrils and out both nostrils, but while retaining the breath in between. We know that Murshid Inayat Khan was a musician. We also know, as we've been told by his students, some of which, but very few, are still living, remember having done this practice to a large metronome in unison, 60 beats per minute. So we will use a kind of metronome. Here we'll hear a tambura with a tabla being played, and we'll use this for our rhythmic breathing. Excuse me. So first, just listen. And we can start to breathe in unison. Remember, the concentration is on throwing the light within. It's as if we're taking the shade off the lantern of the light of the soul and letting it fill our being, and we're using the breath to enliven and contact that light and illuminate us from within. Breathe out and in. Breathe out and in. Breathe out, in. Follow that. Hear those beats. In. Out and in. So get prepared, and whichever manner is comfortable to you, you can close off the right nostril, and we'll begin this practice. There are different hand positions which are taught. I'll just go through a couple of them briefly. One is to put the thumb of the right hand under your chin, closing off the right nostril with your middle finger, using the thumb of your left hand, closing the nostril of your left, using, in other words, the thumb and the middle finger to function as stoppers on your nostrils. If that's comfortable, you might try it. It also keeps the breath very contained. You can feel that. It's kind of a shroud or a kind of veil over the mouth. Some use this posture of concentrating on a kind of a triangle mudra. But you might try this one, since we're really trying to draw the breath and retain it within, enlivening the light within. So again, just get in that posture, and I will not use that posture so that my voice doesn't get obscured by my hands, but I'll try to use my hands to indicate where the nostril breathing is happening. And I will also talk us through that, so you can just relax and follow the guidance. For a moment, let's get the rhythm of our breath again. Breathing out, 2, 3, 4, and in, 2, 3, 4, and out, 2, 3, 4, and in, 2, 3, 4. Close off your right nostril. And start with an out, 2, 3, 4, in left, hold, hold, out right, in right, hold, hold, out left, in left, hold, hold, out right, in right, hold, hold, out left, in left, hold, out right, in right, hold, hold, out left, in left, hold, hold, out right, in right, hold, hold, out left, in left, hold, hold, out right, in right, hold, hold, out left, in both, hold, hold, out both, in both, hold, hold, out both, in both, hold, hold, out both, in both, hold, hold, out, in both, hold, hold, out both. And now let go of the rhythmic breath and feel the breath within. Imagine or feel that the breath is entering every subtle particle of your being and all the spaces in between. The breath touches us inwardly from the most material, the physical body, the emotional body, the body of appetites and passions, the spiritual body, and the etheric body. See the light of your soul filling your entire being, illuminating all the realms of existence. Use this light to create harmony and balance between all the levels of your being and to inform all the levels of your being and to heal any disharmony that might be in any one of those levels of being. Nothing to do, just be light, which is the source and in fact is life. And I'd ask you that you take a moment and see if there's something for which you're seeking an answer or an insight into. It could be regarding your own body. It could be in terms of an emotional relationship or bond, past or present, that one would like to have more insight into. It could be within something of one's being that we consider the realm of appetites. You can take that in all its ramifications. Is there something in the way we think about things or perceive the world that confuses us or creates conflict? Look there and see if the light thrown upon it can shift that view and give insight. Bring all into the realm of divine light and life. Don't search for an answer. Allow it to naturally be illuminated. But there might be something in the formulation of a question that can help to illuminate it. So I'll be quiet for a few moments and let's just do that individually within our own selves.